The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight's guest, Gervario Lombardo Radice, otherwise known as John Morgan. On the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema. This is a forum where we explore genre film and music from around the world, in-depth conversation and career analysis with directors, actors, and musicians, and open discussion on films that matter, those that fall outside the mainstream corporate film by boardroom committee. These are the province of the auteur, the visionary, the dreamer, the outsider. Join us as we delve deep into the cinematic netherworld here on Third Eye Cinema. We will be your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema with a focus on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film, from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. None of that direct that passes from mainstream film these days. This is all about the glory days of independent cinema and major studio cinema too, when certain conditions apply to make their films of interest. From all over the U.S., Canada, Italy, France, Spain, Germany, Indonesia, India, the Philippines, Japan, Hong Kong, or any of the hotbeds of obscure, oddball, or generally wild cinema available on DVD, from the dawn of the medium to this very day. Just don't blame us if we focus on those filmmakers who are still going strong in the field of independent cult film as well. Tonight, we're going to be speaking with Gervario Lombardo Radice, known to cult film fans around the world as John Morgan, star of numerous Italian grindhouse favorites, many of which topped the infamous BBFC Video Nasties list. Gervario has worked with some of the biggest names in Italian cult cinema, including the likes of Fulci, Margheriti, Suavi, Diodato, Lenzi, and stars like David Hess, John Saxon, Fred Williamson, Michael York, and Azio Argento. So stay tuned for our interview with Gervario Lombardo Radice on Third Eye Cinema here on Blog Talk Radio. Gervario, ciao.
Hi.
We have online today, straight from Rome, Italy, the great Gervario Lombardo Radice, otherwise known to fans for his numerous roles in Italian genre cinema, BBFC Video Nasties list, and grindhouse exploitation cinema as John Morgan. Gervario has worked with some of the biggest and or most infamous directors in the field, a veritable who's who of the genre, Antonio Margheriti, Lucio Fulci, Ruggero Diodato, Umberto Lenzi, Joe D'Amato, Michele Suave, Lamberto Bava, and more. So, Gervario, welcome to At Eye Level.
Hi, everybody. A late Merry Christmas and an early Happy New Year to everybody.
So, how's the weather over there in La Bella Roma?
It's a bit chilly, but a good weather. It hasn't been very cold until now, so it's fine.
Yeah, it's actually been relatively warm over here. So, no white Christmas this year. You are most known for your work in a handful of films that set the tone for new extremes in cinema at the dawn of the 80s. Working with many of the most notable and, in some cases, infamous directors of the Italian genre film in the process. Your films, particularly the early ones, showcase an intense, feverish acting style that really makes you stand out from the crowd. Something wild, twisted, with more than a twinge of sickliness comes across in your performances as Ricky, Bob, Mike Logan, or the amusingly named Charlie Bukowski, as these were essentially your first four films, which really makes it astonishing. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, it all started very casually because I was working as a theater actor until I met an agent who was at that time Ruggero Diodato's mother-in-law. We casually met and she asked me if I was interested in making movies. And I was desperate for money because, you know, theater never was a great way to get money, so I said, yes, okay, why not? And then she, Ruggero, was preparing Hasa at the end of the park, and so he coughed me, and that was the beginning of the whole thing. You know, at that time, the horror crew was a little thing, just few directors, and they all knew each other. So the word spread after that first movie, and then Fulci called me, then Margheriti called me, then was Lancestern, and so I was in that.
Now, you know, having starred in these films, which, you know, are notable for their extremes and for their wild nature, your background would suggest something totally otherwise. I mean, you actually hail from a patrician family. I understand you're not only related to...
And it was a patrician family on my mother's side and a communist family on my father's side. And multilingual, so I was raised with three languages, English, French, and Italian. And yes, my grandparents didn't want me to be in show business at all. But I wanted to be a dancer, you know, at the very beginning. But then I couldn't because I injured my back while I was studying in Amsterdam. So then first I took a diploma in massage, in physiotherapy, which I kept using all my life. From time to time, and then when I got back to Italy, I said, okay, I want to be on stage anyway. So if I can't be a dancer, I'll try the theater. So I got into the theater thing, and I started acting and directing as well, pretty young. And but I wasn't. I mean, I've never been a horror fan. All these directors were entirely unknown to me,
right.
So it wasn't something that I really wanted to do because I was saying, oh, I want to be in horror movie. It just happened. Then, you know, it was a very good way to earn money, to travel, and to become a better actor because, you know, at times it's more difficult to try to be good in something that doesn't make sense, and completely alone, because when you are on stage, directors tend to direct you, and in movies they don't. At least these Italian directors weren't. They generally couldn't tell an actor from a sofa, so you were entirely on your own and making decisions, and so it was a sort of a university of acting, and so I'm really glad I made them, but I'm not a fan of horror movies,
right.
So after a time I switched to other things or mixed other things like TV work, period movies, European TV stuff, and different things. Then I got back to horror in the early 90s with Michele Soavi, was a great pal of mine. And so what can I say? I do not complain. Some of these roles were very good. You know, the important thing for an actor is the role to be good, to be some material in it. That's why I never liked the Lanzi one, Cannibal Ferox, because apart from the fact that, in my opinion, it's a great piece of shit because of all the cruelty and the racism and the fascism and whatever, but the role was absolutely non-existent. I mean, it was just a puppet. He hadn't a soul. He hadn't thoughts. He was just screaming all the time. And so I really think I'm terrible in that. And but the other roles, as Ricky in House at the Edge of the Park, or Charlie Bukowski in the Margheriti one, which is my favorite, or even Bob in the Fulci one, they were great roles. So there was acting material in that, and that was the important thing to me. Then I couldn't care less about blood, zombies, and whatever. I was doing my actor's job.
And yet, you know, you mentioned that Ferox is your most hated one of those early films. And yet the intensity, you managed to bring something across anyway, despite the fact that Lindsay is the sort of director that he is. You have an intensity that makes it a lot of people who watch these films say that, you know, that's like your strongest performance from your early films.
They keep telling me that, but I don't know what to say. I can't agree. Once in an interview, I say that in a movie school, I would create a room and with a title, and the title would be "Don't Do It." And in that room, I'll show things, and the first "Don't Do It" class would be about my interpretation in Campbell's room. I mean, I'm just shouting all the time. That's the old thing I'm doing. Anyhow, if so many people say there's something in it, I'm glad about it.
You also made an amusing comment in one interview once that you never knew who you were going to be on set with. You could be working next to a prostitute. You could be working next to someone just pulled in off the street that has no acting experience. You could be working next to a great actor. You didn't really know who you were going to get involved in these sort of films. They would just drag anybody in. How frustrating was that, or how? What kind of challenge did you present?
Very frustrating. At times, very frustrating, because if you are working with non-actors, it can be really complicated.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, at times, all first thing, all these movies were in English. At times, they were casting some actors who couldn't speak English.
Right.
I remember a time, it wasn't a horror movie, it was a TV Italian production, but in English. And I had a scene with a guy, I think he was Egyptian or Turk or I don't know what. He wasn't an actor, couldn't speak English, didn't know what to say, and he had some lines. So the end of it was that I was doing my dialogue without him. I said, took him away. I prefer to look in the void. Then when it was his turn, I was in front of him. I was saying his lines very slowly. He was reading my mouth and saying lines.
Wow.
I mean, that's not really how things are supposed to develop in the shooting process, but at times it can be very tiring, very tiring.
Okay, well, jumping back to where I was going with this originally, I understand you're not only related, I gather, on your mother's side to Italian aristocracy, but most interestingly, you mentioned that you were related somehow to Lisa Gherardini, the famous subject of Da Vinci's Mona Lisa.
Well, it's the same route. Fact is, this is a story I heard in the family, told by my grandmother's brother, who was the head of the family, Raffaello Morgan, and that because I took the Morgan name from my grandmother's family, and they weren't enthusiastic about that. And so this Raffaello Morgan, my great uncle, was saying, we descend from the Mona Lisa, blah, 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 blah. And I thought that this old gentleman was just saying stupid things. He was foolish. Then later on, I discovered that he was right, because the Morgan were related to the Gagardini. I mean, my grandmother's grandmother was the last of the Gagardini family. And Mona Lisa, apparently, I mean, that's what they say on the internet, or she was Gagardini by birth, and then married to this Del Giocondo and then the La Gioconda name came from.
Right.
So she was a Gagardini, and so yes, I am. Leonardo's lady was my.
You also have, as you mentioned, some strong credentials on theater and stage, both on the acting and directing side. So you sort of addressed this already, but I was going to ask you, tell us about what led you to Ruggero Deodato's doorstep for La Casa Sperduta nel Parco or The House on the Edge of the Park. You sort of mentioned that already, but if there's anything you want to add to that, you know, feel free.
But, you know, that movie in particular was it was a great start, because I was very tense and I was scared about being in a movie.
Right.
My first movie with such a big role. I mean, it's an entire different thing. I mean, a movie I've never been on set in my life, and I was starting with a big role. What helped a lot was that the movie had a sort of stage quality.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, you could make a play out of it.
Yes, it was very much one set.
Yes, it's one set, all in one room, long shots. In this regard, the fact of being a theater actor helped a lot. And then I found out that directors love the fact that you're a theater person because they know that they can rely on you.
Right.
You know your dialogue. There's a professional thing about being a stage person, and you carry that on set.
Right. So what was it like working with Diodato? When I met him the other year at a show convention, he seemed to be a quiet and likable sort, but he's known for some very extreme and often mean-spirited filmmaking.
Believe me, quiet is not the adjective I would use. No, he's not quiet at all. Ruggero is always bouncing with energy. And more when he was younger, so he was always doing something, thinking something, saying that he was shouting a lot, but in a joking way. I mean, not seriously. So he was surely a shouting director, but he was shouting, then making a joke, then shouting again.
Right.
But he was really, and still is, one of the more energetic persons I have met in my life. I mean, he's I was in a convention with him once, and you know how conventions go. I mean, there's at times you're busy, at times you have nothing to do with that. So at times I was just sitting there thinking, and Ruggero was always chatting, and going from table to table, and trying to speak English, which is, I mean, it's not his best quality, I must say. He's a very funny person, a very clever person, and I like him very much. I mean, because I'm a bit lazy, you know. So when I work with Ruggero, which I'm doing now because we're working on the house at the edge.
Yes, I was going to get to that later, correct.
And so he gives me a lot of stamina, you know.
Right. But even so, he's not as quiet as he seemed to be, probably because he's not so comfortable with English. But he seemed like a really likable sort, which you seem to reinforce here. And
he's very likable.
But he's known for some very extreme and often mean-spirited filmmaking.
You know, that's a mystery. At times, the most likable people have the worst fantasies. I don't know, it's their dark side. I worked with a young English director, Darren Ward. And Darren is really, you know, Mr. Kind. He's a sweet guy with a sweet wife, two little girls, the family man, Prince Charming. And then he makes the most terrible, violent movies. As for Ruggero, I must say that he's really a professional. He made a lot of different stuff in his life, including a very famous TV series I wrote, and he directed it, which was a teenager thing, nothing connected with horror.
Right.
So he made all different kind of things. And what happened is that he had this big success with Cannibal Holocaust. And from there on, I mean, he likes working, so he's on the horse, on the winning horse.
Right, he capitalizes on his fame. So.
Horror, it's okay, but I wouldn't say he's a horror man. All of them, Fulci, Diodato, Margheriti, Lenzi, they were really professionals. I mean, they had been in whatever, from spaghetti westerns to the ancient Rome to... then the fashion was horror, and horror they were making. But I think the only one of the directors I worked with who was really interested in horror as his personal fantasy was Michele Soavi.
Right. Again, about Diodato, you must have had some sort of a rapport there because you came back for another Diodato film, which was Un Delitto Poco Comune, which was The Phantom of Death in 1987. There you played...
Because I didn't hear that one because there was some...
I was wondering what that interference was, yeah.
Yeah.
You must have had some rapport with Diodato because you came back for another one of his films, which was Un Delitto Poco Comune, which
is
The Phantom of Death in 1987.
Yeah, that was a very short thing, but I like to remember it because I had the occasion to work with Michael York, who's one of the best actors I ever worked with, he was really positively vibing. I mean, it was an extraterrestrial experience working with Michael York, so I was glad to be in that movie.
Your second film was for the equally infamous Lucio Fulci with Paolo nella città dei moderni venti, which is commonly known as Gates of Hell or City of the Tell us about working for Fulci, who made some very unusual films, but has something of a reputation of being difficult and really throwing tantrums on set.
He had a terrible reputation, so I was very scared because everybody had told me, it will be a hell, he mistreats people and this and that. But no, with me, he was always very kind from the first moment. You know, the guy was supposed to be hunchbacked.
Right.
So they had prepared a fake hunchback, and I saw the thing, and I said, "Oh gosh, I'm looking like Quasimodo in Notre Dame." So I said, "Listen, sir, can I try faking the hunchback myself without using this?" And so he said, "Show me." And I was just walking around in a sort of Richard III position. It was a character I always loved and studied. And so he said, "Oh, okay. Oh, great. Okay, fine." Then I heard him saying to himself, but loud, you know, it's always good to hire theater people. And from there on, he was he was a very cultivated man.
Yeah.
I think I was the only actor he was inviting to dinner after shooting. So it was him, the director of photography, Salvati,
right.
A guy to whom I owe really a lot because he was the one who really made a sort of lessons to me about the camera, how relating to the camera. So I've always been grateful to Salvati, and we were having dinner afterwards at night mostly because the shooting was mostly late in the evening, and so we were chatting. He was a very cultivated man about movies, about books, so he was respectful of my family background, and so I never had the slightest problem with him, but yes, he was surely a difficult man.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Giovanni Lombardo Radice. Coming up, we discuss Margariti, the cocaine incident, Lindsay and working in the Amazon, Martino, the Angelus, and a lunatic in the theater. On to one of the greats of Italian genre film, which was Antonio Margheriti for Apocalypse Domini, otherwise known as Cannibal Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Margheriti was known best for his numerous Italian gothics and sci-fi pictures in the early 60s, and he remains well-respected, while some of these other directors you work with have a more of a less favorable reputation because they turned out several entries in this field of extremist cinema. Tell us about your experience with Margheriti.
Margheriti was my favorite. I loved the man, and he was such a gentleman. He had a great sense of humor, which is very important to me whilst working. I can't stand people taking themselves too seriously.
Right.
That's why I couldn't stand Lindsay. I mean, if he's pissing around, he thinks he created the River Nilo. Margheriti can make a masterpiece and say, he was saying, "I'm a butcher, I sell movies by the kilo." So he had a great sense of humor. He was a real gentleman, always respectful, always kind, very respectful toward actors. He was one of the few who couldn't stand, the crew just talking whilst you were rehearsing or things. And And so he was a great experience with this. And the character was surely, dog is barking.
That's okay.
And because the character was very well written, very well written. And I must say that at the very beginning in that movie, when I read the script, I said, "Oh my God, what crap! I mean, it's unbelievable."
Right.
Then I changed my mind because it had a sort of it was a sort of a prophecy. It was metaphorical.
Right.
There was this idea that evil comes from evil, so from war, because the beginning of it all was the Vietnam War,
right?
And so that from war comes evil, and evil is spreading around, and then a couple of years later, the AIDS tragedy began. So there was more than you could see at first sight.
And I also think the character roles were very well written for one of these sort of films. I don't know if the actors developed that yourselves or if that was in the script.
No, it was very well written from the beginning. No, I must say it was very well written, so I was really into it. You know, one thing I must say is that when I was young and I was making these movies, there was a certain frail and neurotic quality about myself.
Right.
I wasn't very at peace with life. I was, I would say, disturbed. I had great problems with alcohol, with drugs, with whatever. So this surely, directors could see that in me, and this surely helped with the characters.
Yeah, that's probably what I was referring to earlier, that sort of like sickly intensity that you had there. Maybe that's where that was coming from.
Now, you know, nowadays I watch back these movies, and I have to do it because of the commentaries and the interviews, and they show them at festivals, so it happens that I... and nowadays I can judge myself as if it was another person.
Right.
I mean, it was so many years ago, I was so different that I can't say, oh, okay, it's me. So I have a detached attitude towards
right.
it, and I say that yes, there's a certain special quality, not about the acting, but about myself, I would say. You know, because in movies, what you really are shows a lot more than
on stage, because you don't have to project as much. It's very intimate.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. It's I don't know what, but there's something that shows your own real personality.
There's also an amusing story you once related about running into the law during the filming of this picture. Can you share that for our listeners?
What story, sorry?
I'm thinking about the story you told about how you ran into the law when you went to the bathroom at one point during the filming of this picture.
Yes, I as I said, I stupidly was on cocaine in those years.
Right.
Very stupidly. I regret it. I'm sorry about it. I advise every young person listening not to do it. It's the most stupid drug. If you want to smoke joints, do. Not too many, possibly, but cocaine is really shit. I mean, you makes you think that you're clever and you're just the same. It's really stupid, and it's very bad for your health, for your heart, for your teeth, and for whatever. Anyway, I was in it, and I can't deny it. So we were shooting the scene in the supermarket, which was a Walmart. I don't know. It was huge, an entire building. Of course, closed because we were shooting, and we were shooting at one end of it. So in a break, I thought, okay, now I'm going to snort some cocaine. And I crossed the old building to find a toilet, which was not the one we were using, closer to to the set. So walk. Then I got, I got in, no desert, nobody, not a sound. And I started cutting the stone.
Right.
And then looked in the mirror, and the policeman was behind me. And I said, oh God, I'm going to jail now. I'm in America. American policemen are terrible. Oh my God. So I made a nice smile, and he smiled back and started rolling a joint.
That was the time period. You know, that's the 1980s. So. Okay, so from here you wound up with a director who is best known for his Poliziotteci, which was Umberto Lenzi, for his Campbell Fear Rox, known on these shores also as Trap Them and Kill Them. And I understand this was something of a rough shoot overall, and your experiences with Lenzi were not all that pleasant, as you hinted at already. Can you elaborate a bit on this?
I mean, just before knowing him, I read the script. Because he didn't offer me Mike Logan at first. He offered me the other role, the Mike Logan friend, whose name was Joe or something.
Right.
The weak one, always depending on the leading role. Bullshit, I was sick and tired of that. I mean, I had been doing that for four movies already,
right.
And I was sick. And I thought this script was horrid. So I said, oh God, but I was in such a bad need of money. So I stayed all the night away saying, oh, what am I going to do? Then I told my agent, okay, tell him this, that it's either the leading role or nothing, and that I want thrice the money. And he agreed to both things, so I was trapped into it.
Right.
A strong part of me really for the first, because I always hope to be to get work, because I like working, I need working, and whatever. So whatever I'm offered or I audition for, I hope to be got into it. That was maybe the first time that really more than half of myself was really hoping not to...
Right.
To do it. But then he said, yes, I was trapped into it in Amazonas shooting in Amazonas.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I don't recommend.
Your portions of the film were done on location in Colombia. So what was it like working in the Amazonian jungle? I understand you were situated in the Golden Triangle with some
shootouts
and all kinds of dangerous situations being commonplace.
This little city whose name is Leticia. It's at the very, it's at the border from in between three countries, which are Brazil, Colombia, and Peru.
Right.
As the first thing, there was a local war in between Colombia and Peru, so they were shooting around us. The place is really number one as for cocaine. They do not even take time to make cocaine. They just send the leaves by plane to Bogota or somewhere else, and which means that you can get there only by plane. The place was really a little village with, I would say, barracks. Not even houses. The hotel was this shittier place I've ever been in, and but they're rich as hell. In there was a casino, X-rated movies, motorcycle, huge motorcycles, and huge cars. Just to doing nothing because
right.
There was no way to go, and they were even shooting each other on the street.
Oof.
Quite daily. Then the weather is terrible. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. You know, summing it up, I once said that to be in the Amazonas shooting, you should be directed by Cronenberg or Fellini or and shooting with Lenzi. The location should be the French Alps, but Lenzi and the Amazonas together are more than one individual is
take.
Yeah, exactly. The only joy in all that was Lorenda Sella. I was very friend with her.
Right.
We were speaking French, so we were saying nastiest thing about everybody without anybody understanding us, and she was the only refreshing moment.
Now, according to some sources, you were also in Sergio Martino's Assassino al Cimitero Etrusco,
and
The Scorpion with Two Tails.
I was two things by Martino. One was that one about the Etruscan cemetery, and the other one was a giallo for Italian TV.
Yeah, because it must have been a brief appearance, because, you know, just offhand, I haven't seen it in a couple of years, but I don't recall your being there, and it isn't listed in your credits.
Because there were two versions. No, because you saw the movie version, didn't
right.
you? Right. Yeah, okay, my role was cut in that one.
Okay, because it was originally for TV, right?
Originally, it was made for TV in, I think, 4 episodes.
Ah, okay.
Anyhow, I was just doing the same as I was doing in the Fulci one. But Martino is the briskest man I ever met. I mean, he's an icicle. A very good director. I mean, and he has something that stimulates you to, because he's so icy that you tell yourself, okay, I must do something to
break that, right?
I mean, just to make him have an expression. He's a block of ice. So he said to me, I saw the Fulci movie. Just do the same. And I mean,
That was going to be my next question. What was Sergio like? Because when I saw him the other year, he seemed like he's very reserved, even a bit severe.
Yeah, absolutely. Reserved is a polite way to put it. I mean, he's sort of, he's robotical. but a good director, I must say.
Yes.
A good director.
Yeah, he did a lot of movies that I enjoy. After a brief diversion to TV movies, you next works with, and you're going to love this one, producer Fabrizio De Angelis on Impatto Mortale. What motivated him to take on the...
I mean, he made Lanzi my blacklist.
What,
no,
what
maybe he's even worse than Lanzi, because Lanzi is a stupid man, and you must, I mean, stupid people are not responsible about being stupid. And De Angelis is not stupid, he's really mean, which is a different thing. So yes, I made this terribly dangerous movie after some years doing other stuff and not being on cocaine anymore. So I was in the most dangerous situation, saying, oh my God, and they were expecting me. You know, I had this fame of being one brave, one doing whatever, one not using stuntmen. And so it was it wasn't a nice experience, I must say.
Yeah, what I was going to ask you is, do you know what motivated him to take on the reins of directing himself? You know, he was known for being a producer, and this was,
yeah,
I believe, his first.
The terrible thing about it was he was both producer and director, which meant that you had nobody to complain with.
Right. And, you know, it wasn't a very memorable film, and I like Italian action crime films from that period. You know, I'd also seen The Thunder, which he had done, and I was similarly unimpressed. So I was really wondering what possessed this guy to say, you know what, I think I'm going to direct this film.
I don't know. He had some connections in Arizona. I don't know. I must say my role was okay. So I can say a lot. Then in watching that movie, I had a very funny experience, because I generally don't go to the theaters to watch my movie.
Right.
Either I see them whilst dubbing or at a special projection for cast and crew or whatever. I don't like to, you know, to go there. But that time, I don't know what happened. I went to see it in a cinema in Rome,
right.
And just in front, it wasn't very crowded, and it was afternoon, and in the row just in front of me, there was a guy, huge guy, clearly disturbed, that each time I was on screen was saying, son of a bitch, I'm gonna fuck you, but yeah, I hate you, I'm gonna kill you, I'm gonna break your legs, and just, how would you think? So I was just disappearing under my seat, trying not to be recognized by the guy. And no, it wasn't a nice experience. Once it was very nice meeting back Bo Svensson, just 1 month ago, I was in Texas filming, and then I went to the Chiller convention, and he was there, and it was very, very nice and funny. We had a great time together.
You did a few more things for television after this, and then in 1986, you took part in Aristide Massicese, which was known commonly as Joe D'Amato, his softcore erotic film, Undici Giorni, Undici Notti, which filmed here as 11 Days, 11 Nights. This was actually a popular...
No. There's a misunderstanding. In that, I didn't understand why I was listed in that movie until a journalist finally told me. Fact is that in that movie, and I never saw it,
right,
the characters in the movie at a point go to a theater and they watch Bloody Bird.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I'm credited in that one.
Yeah, because they credited you as Brett, and I thought that you were the photographer.
Yeah, Brett is the same role as in Bloody Bird.
Ah.
No, Stage Fright, whatever. I don't know what's the American title for that. And
thank you for clearing that one up.
I knew Joe D'Amato fairly well. I had him as a producer in exactly in Bloody Bird. That's why he was using the footage, because it was his. And I knew him as a person, but I never worked in one of his movies.
Okay. Well, basically. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Giovanni Lombardo Ribice. Coming up, we discuss Nicola Suave, working with Aggio Argento, Lombardo Bava, and his religious roles. Coming here on Third Eye Cinema. Next, you actually did Bloody Bird, also known as Deliria, also known as Stage Fright. This is actually one of your more amusing parts. You were quite ditzy and wry there.
Yeah, funny, very funny. Was one of the few comedy roles I got in my movie career. Whilst on stage, I'm reputed as a very good comedy actor. And but in movies, you know, because of the face, the blue eyes, cheekbones, or whatever, they tend not to call me for comedy, and they're wrong, because I'm very good in comedy. And that was one of the few comedy roles I got, and it was very fun. It was my first gay role as well.
Okay.
I rewrote, on Michele's request, I rewrote some of the dialogue, because it was about stage. I was a stage person, so I knew about that bitchy-bitchy stage people, and Mary Sellers was very nice. We worked together on theater. We started an English theater company in Rome, so it was a very nice experience. And then Michele was a great friend of mine, so whatever I was doing with him, I was twice as careful as in any other occasion to give my best, to help in any possible way. It was different. Working with Michele was something, you know, it had a plus.
Right. Well, going back a little bit, the film came out under the auspices of D'Amato's Film Mirage company, and I understand that Suave at that point was sort of apprenticing under Massachese. What were the circumstances like in this film? Did you see or deal with D'Amato on this film, or was it just totally Suave?
No, it's entirely Suave. It's entirely Suave. The only thing that happened is that after, I think, 2 or 3 weeks of shooting, they ran out of money. The movie was suspended, sort of. And when we resumed shooting, the cameraman was not anymore there, and Massachese was just himself behind the camera.
Right.
Because he was a very good cameraman.
Yes, he was. He's known for being a cinematographer first.
Yes. And so that was happening, but it was entirely Michele.
Okay.
And Massachese was not even, I mean, pretending to make his point of views. No, I mean, it was just there.
Okay. Now, Michele kept you on board for most of his brief film careers. You had small parts in each of his next two films, La Chiesa or The Church in 1989, and then La Setta or The Sect, which was also released as The Devil's Daughter in 1991. He liked using his then-girlfriend Barbara Cupisti in the female lead roles on most of his films. And you'd also, I was going to say you'd also work with her on 11 Days, 11 Nights, which is not true. What was she like to work with?
Barbara, I love Barbara. We are still friends. We hope to be in the next Darren Ward movie together. She as the policewoman and me as nasty. It's a softer word. It's a terrible gangster. ferocious. And so we hope to be together in that movie. And Darren wanted my role. At first, he had an Italian name. And I said, Darren, why an Italian name? I mean, why don't you make him... I can fake a Russian accent. You know, Russian accent, speaking like that. And so you say, why don't you call him Lencevich? As an homage to Umberto Lenzi. And Barbara agreed. She's not really into acting anymore. She's directing. She's a very good director of documentaries, very serious stuff about poverty in the world, children, exploitation of children. I mean, she's very serious. But she agreed being in that movie with me. So Darren is working on financing, and we hope to be on set together again. And when we were, it was like a family. We being with Barbara and Michele, we was really family-like.
You also worked with a young Aja Argento in La Chiesa. What was he like at the time?
Funny. She always was a funny girl. At that time, you know, she was 12, I think, which is a difficult age for a girl, because she was a little girl in a way, but physically she was a little woman with her little teeth, with her. I mean, she was, how would you say, developed.
Right.
But she was behaving like if she had been four. She was sitting in your lap, teasing you, putting her hands into your shirt, which was a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, a bit difficult, right?
Yeah. But she was nice. She was nice, and her father is a person. I never worked with him as a director, and I regret it. But as a person, he's fantastic. He's really funny.
That was actually the next question I was going to ask you. Speaking of the Argentos, Dario Argento was heavily involved in La Chiesa.
He was producing La Chiesa and La Setta and whatever. And what was a bit pissing about it was that his name was huge and Michele little. But anyway, they had a great relationship with Michele. I heard people saying that he was imposing himself on Michele. No, it wasn't true, no. Dario is really one of these people who like movies he's a craftsman.
Right.
So he was always on set, but not because he was the producer and he wanted to interfere with Michele's decision. No, he was just there helping the stage works and helping the crew and doing things. But I don't think he was imposing himself at all.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask you next. What extent he had input on the film?
Michele might look as a sweet guy, even childish, but he is as tough as stone. So to impose oneself on Michele is not easy.
But yet there were some strong stylistic touches that suggested that Argento was more than a little bit involved in, at least La Chiesa, mostly in the visuals. And now you're saying that was basically just all Michele? He was...
All Michele. So I was there all the time. I was, because we were all there, you know, all the characters were there. I was there all the time. I used to go on set even if it wasn't required, because just to help Michele or to be there. I can witness that it's not true.
Well, this is actually good, because you've actually made Suave more of an impressive director than he already was. So
No, Sachs is an incredibly good director, incredibly good. And as I told you before, differently from the others, he was really believing in what he was doing. It wasn't just something to make bread and butter. He was really his passion, horror, at that time. He was very cultivated. He was reading Lovecraft. He got me the book with all the Lovecraft work. He's a very good. He's very, you know, he hasn't a logical mind. He works with visions. He dreams at night. Then he's a very good painter. He paints what he dreams and then put the paintings on screen. I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. They're very painterly. It's not really linear and logical.
It's like working with Chagall or Matisse. I don't know. If you with Michele, if you ask yourself why am I doing this and why this is happening, you are lost.
Right.
If you just abandon yourself to his hands, then it's perfect.
Do you have, since you're friends with him, do you have any idea why he basically, I don't want to say dropped out of the field, but he hasn't really made many films, if anything, since I believe it was Cemetery Man, which was in the early 90s.
But, you know, he's number one in Italian TV as mostly for crime dramas and mafia movies. He's number one in Europe, I think, because these products are sold all over Europe, maybe not in the States, but surely in Europe. And so he's incredibly famous and working all the time.
Oh, well, it's a shame that they're not bringing us over here.
I think what happened is maybe that just he understood, because he's very clever. Because you meet him and say, this guy doesn't live in this world. It's a bit like Dostoevsky the idiot, he's very clever. He probably understood that the horror thing was
going away, yeah.
But it wasn't fancy anymore. I mean, it was closing, and so he switched to other stuff. He's very good at it: action movies, drama, crime dramas, mafia. But he even made a movie about St. Francis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In 1992, you worked with yet another prolific Italian genre director, Lamberto Bava, on his Puzzle, which came over here as Body Puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
This one was actually probably my favorite role of yours. Was this role closer to your own persona than some of the earlier, more manic roles?
Can you believe I don't remember anything about that movie?
Really?
I never watched it back because it's a short movie, so they are not asking me for commentaries or whatever. I never saw it because I just saw my scenes at dubbing.
Right.
I just remember that I was gay.
Right.
I was on a horse.
Yes. You.
Sarana was there.
You kind of ran a ranch where there was stables and carriages, and you were very, very wry and campy. It was very amusing.
Yeah, I don't remember. I met Lamberto last year in Sicily. We were at a festival together. He's a very nice person. But no, really, that movie is something I don't remember. Because, you know, if I don't have a big role, at times I don't see even La Secta,
right.
I don't see it all.
Right. From here, you seem to have taken something of a permanent sabbatical from genre film for a long period, working mostly in television and stage, and you did a few religious films. There was a biopic of Padre Pio, there's another St. Paul. Was this some sort of an attempt to purge yourself of a more insalubrious past in cinema with all these horror films you've done?
You know, let's be sincere. Actors are like whores. They do it for cash. So, I mean, what do you want from me? Horror. Horror it is. What do you want from me? To be a saint? A saint it is. A priest? A priest. I must say I had a great religious career because I was a priest many a time. Then I was a cardinal in a TV movie. Then I was... I had been Jesus on stage in a production of... Milton. Paradise Lost. And then finally, a few months ago, I was, guess what?
A priest.
Not a priest, a cardinal.
A cardinal, okay.
Pope, was the Pope in Padre Pio. So a priest, a cardinal, a Pope, then what? Jesus Christ, then what? And guess God.
You were God?
I in an English movie called The Reverend, which is coming out now.
Wow.
I had this cameo role along with Rutger Hauer. He was the devil and I was God. We had a scene together at the beginning of the role. So as for religion, I had a perfect career. More than this, it's impossible. It's not. I didn't want to redeem myself from anything. When they called me for The Omen, I was in The Omen. I hope the roles to be good. Maybe now I could refuse a role I don't like or a movie I don't like. I can afford this, but it's just work. I mean, I don't really care if it's intellectual, horror, war, period.
Right.
I'm interested in the role, in the sheer fact of acting. I like acting. It's the most funny thing that I can think of.
You actually have a knack for anticipating my questions right before I'm about to ask them, because I was about to say more recently you've shown up briefly in a remake of The Omen, and you appear to be making a slight return to the sort of genre film you're popularly known for. You're in pre-production on a few films, which just from the title scream, you know, these grindhouse classics you used to do. There's one called Mondo Holocausto. There's
Mondo Holocausto. It's just something that jumps on and off from the internet. It was a script I was offered, which was funny. As a matter of fact, it's a comedy. It's like the Airplane movies.
Oh yes.
It's the same thing about horror. So it was funny, and then my role was in a New York subplot, so I wasn't involved in jungle things. So they asked me, can I use your name? I say yes, but I don't think it will never be produced. What's real, it's The Reverend, which is coming off now on screen and on DVD. Then I was... 2 years ago, I was in this Darren Ward movie, A Day of Violence, then in another Italian one, but shot in English in L.A., which is called House of Flesh Mannequins.
Okay.
And I made this movie in Texas called The Infliction, which will come out next spring, in which I have a different role. I'm the good policeman, very different. A sort of Humphrey Bogart role, very very new to me, and with a young director, Matan Harris, very good one. And then we hope to shoot House at the Edge of the Park, too.
Right, which you actually had a hand in scripting. And what I was going to ask you, following on my previous question about the priests and religious roles, does this imply you've come more to terms with your past and people's perception of you as that video nasty star?
No, I mean, I have a sort of split reality, because here in Italy, I'm considered a serious theater person.
Right.
I'm considered a great translator.
Right.
I'm considered maybe the best living Shakespeare translator in Italy. if they know about my horror past, they just laugh about it.
Okay.
They think it's something I did for the fun of it. And so that's why my website is divided in two. It's a split image of myself, one in black and white, one in color. And it's one is called the nice side, and the other one is called the horror side. because I had to do this, because some people are interested in what I did in as for theater, as for translating, as for radio, and horror fans aren't at all. So when I go abroad, I am the one who made all these movies, and people compliment me for those, and it's okay. I mean, it's okay. It's part of being an actor to have a split personality.
Yeah, and you know, you got to realize also that the things that you're doing over there don't always come over here. So it's not even a case of nobody cares about those and they only care about the horror. It's just we don't even see the rest of it. All we're seeing is these films.
Sure. That's true. Because I did a lot of stuff for, let's say, European fiction, which includes United Kingdom, Germany, France.
Right.
And whatever. United States, I think there's a technical difficulty also with DVDs, because you have a different system.
Right.
listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Giovanni Lombardi, the DJ. Coming up, we discuss the fascism of horror and some anecdotes about stars he's worked with, only here on Third Eye Cinema. One thing, and I'm sure the listeners already can pick this up by now, but one thing that I've always admired about you is that you're unafraid to be outspoken and controversial in relation to what you believe. For one example, you said things to the effect that, and I think you actually brought this up earlier, that watching these sort of films amounts to a sort of association with or longing for fascism. Now, I can't wholly agree here.
That's true only for Cannibal Ferox.
Okay. Because I was going to say, you know, I'm about as far from that political social standpoint as you can get, but then I'm one of the apparent few who isn't just watching these films for the bloodshed, but, you know, for the hothouse atmosphere, the nightmare logic, the oneric feel, and the whole dream state. So I do agree there's some substance to that allegation, because it disturbs me to see how some audiences are really bloodthirsty and fans really seem to get worked up about, you know.
It's very disturbing, and this happens when movies pretend to mimic reality.
Yeah.
Where I always made a big difference in what's fantasy and what's pretending to be real. Like fantasy, it's always all right, because if you think about it, horror movies are just the following of fairy tales.
Right.
Are modern fairy tales, and fairy tales can be very cruel and very bloody if you read the not the Walt Disney versions, but the originals,
right?
They're really frightening and bloody. At the end of Cinderella, the birds pick the eyes of the bad sisters. I mean,
right.
That's sheer fool-ty. I mean, so it's modern fairy tales, and it's okay. It relates with fantasy, with nightmares, with okay. When you want to, as Lenzi did in Cannibal Ferox, pretend to be real, it's a more dangerous game. It's bad taste, and then there's reactions. I read a lot of commentaries on the internet, like saying, "Oh yes, I would like to do a woman."
Yeah. I mean, that's really disturbing to me. To me, this is more like, you know, the Italian tradition.
I must say, I don't believe I was involved in the United Kingdom in a huge and very serious debate about censorship and
right.
and debating of movies, and so I because only now in the United Kingdom they're releasing House at the Edge of the Park or
right.
Cannibal Holocaust because they were banned.
Right. I mean, to me, these films are more like I mentioned, like a dream state, nightmare logic. And also this Italian tradition of, like, opera where, you know, if you
yes.
read the librettos, it's very over the top, very violent,
yeah.
very bloody.
Sure.
You know, but it's not meant to be, okay, let's go out and do this. It's meant, you know, it's a dream logic. It's,
exactly.
it's a fairy tale.
Exactly. Anyway, in any case, I'm against censorship. In the sense, I'm perfectly okay with the fact that minors can't watch things, even
right.
if nowadays it's preposterous, because these things are on the internet, they are on DVD. So, I mean, you just for morality's sake, you can say young people can't watch it. There's no way.
Well, they're impressionable. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, that's fine by me, but I don't think that an adult should
right.
be prohibited to watch what he wants to watch. Would, censorship should come before that.
Right.
You should prevent people from using animals and killing them.
Right.
Before shooting, not after.
Right, exactly. You've also expressed some distaste towards having to sign stills from some of your early films, but when I met you recently at the Chiller Show, I had a hard time finding one that wasn't a gruesome death scene. Now, I gather this is a case of giving the audience what they want, but me personally, I could have dealt with something that was a bit tamer from one of your films that were, you know, one of the famous films that I know you're from. Could you expound on this dichotomy a little?
That's death scenes are a bore.
Yeah.
for an actor, they take a long, an extremely long time. At times, they're dangerous.
Right.
There's nothing you have to do as an actor apart from scream. When I was shooting Cannibal Ferox, I asked myself the question, what will be the reaction if they cut off my dick? Scream! What else can I do?
I know.
So you just say you have blood in your mouth, which is incredibly untasty,
right.
And you just and that's it. So, but the audience loves them.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I would like something from those films that said, okay, it's from this film. I remember watching you in this. Here's your part. But it's something where, you know, you're doing something. You're standing there. It's atmospheric. It's a nice shot. Not just, here's the murder scene. And that's, and not you, but, you know, since you
had... But people keep asking about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that bothers me about the horror audience, that there's so much of this bloodthirstiness as opposed to, appreciation of the film as film or as, you know, Nightmare Logic as a fairy tale. It's more
I know. Well, it's better watching Gates of Hell than killing one's wife or mother.
It's cathartic. All right, well, tell us about some of the actors you've been associated with. It's actually quite a list. It's a veritable who's who of Italian, U.S. and genre film. And I was just going to feed you a few names, and if you could, just give a few comments or any anecdotes you'd like to share about working with these people.
Sure.
Okay. John Saxon.
Cold, professional, clearly disturbed by what he was doing, always by himself, not very friendly, but okay.
David Hess, the late David Hess.
My passion. I love David. David was... okay, it was the force of the nature. It was a tsunami. And I miss him incredibly. I loved him. I was very grateful to him because in my first movie he helped me a lot. He wasn't jealous at all. He was always trying to help me in whatever way. It was a very sad loss, and he was actually a great actor and a great person, I must say.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have met him again at one of these chiller shows, and he was great to us. But I understand he really did have this thing where he would kind of test people out and see, are they looking at me as, you know, being Krug or one of these characters, or are they looking at me as me, the actor? And if he saw that, then, you know, he was good with you, so.
Yeah, I was so kind, so funny. So.
Exactly.
Well, we had great time together, even in recent years. We went to Scotland together to a festival, and we sang and danced and being crazy with the fans, and because I'm a bit shy, but when I was with David, he was like sort of taking me in his wave, you know.
Right. Christopher George, I don't know if you had any scenes with him.
No, I never met him. Never met him. Because in these movies, if you don't have scenes together,
that's it, right.
Eat.
How about Fred Williamson? Did you do any scenes with him?
Fred Williamson was absolutely, how can I say, he couldn't care less about what he was doing. And more than with Fred Williamson, I had to cope with the puppet of Fred Williamson, because, you know, in all the dangerous scenes, I was there for real, whilst Bo and Fred had their puppets.
And actually, that's what I was going to ask you about next, was Bo Svenson, because I know he's had the reputation for being difficult.
Yeah. No, but Bo was difficult, but in a nice way. I mean, and then I saw him a few couple of months ago, and he was I'm glad because he found peace. He's very funny. At that time, he was more. He had personal difficulties, I think. So he was a bit, was drinking a bit too much, but nothing. Nothing to be compared with one I think you'll be named next, which is Anthony Quinn.
Yes.
Boy, in Italy they say if you speak about the dead, it's good or nothing. but Anthony Quinn, oh my God, it was an experience. I was looking at Margheriti like saying, but is it real? And I really was just shrugging and like saying, he's Anthony Quinn, what can I do? Because he was casting shadows in your face, stamping on your feet.
That's what I'd heard. He was stamping on his feet.
Everybody, he was... You know, and you can people. His personal dressing person was always crying every day.
Yeah, I mean, if you're working with people, I mean, even if you never work with them again, you get a reputation. What possesses someone to do something like this? And it's not like he was a slouch actor; he was actually a good actor. So why?
Yeah, and he was so famous. You know, he was. I made a bit of psychoanalysis of Anthony Quinn, and I think that he had a terrible childhood. He really struggled to success. He was a poor Mexican boy, and I think he did whatever to get out of it. And he had still that in his DNA, you know?
Right.
So, because he was so famous, he was the star, he was the Oscar Academy Award winning, what else do you want from life, man?
Right.
Why are you bothering us? But he was. He was.
Okay, Michael York.
Oh, Michael York, I told you. He was. He has something magic about him. I don't know, he's a very nice person, cultivated. We talked about theater. He was doing theater in L.A. With Marsha Mason, so we talked about whatever. And okay, then on set, when he was touching me, I had electric shock.
Really?
See, yes, it was something I can't describe. I was mesmerized.
Did you have any scenes with Donald Pleasence in that movie?
No, I was in with Donald Pleasence in more than one movie. I think in two or three, but never met him.
Okay, Ventantino Ventanini.
Ventantino Ventanini. But, well, Ventantino, he's not really an actor. He's typically Italian from the 60s, this good-looking guy, sportive. But he has been in many movies. He's a nice person. He's a very nice person. I wouldn't say he's a real actor.
Okay. Again, I don't know if you had any scenes, but Johnny Garco.
What did he do with Johnny Garco?
I'll have to pull that up. I had it in the list from IMDb.
Anyway, I know him because of the stage, but I can't remember being in a movie with him. Maybe it was the one we were talking before, the one I never saw.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking it was. Yeah, because he was like a priest or something.
We didn't have scenes together, so I didn't meet Johnny on set. I know him because of the stage.
You know, actually, I'm thinking about it. I think it was the same Deodato film with Pleasance and Michael York.
Might be, but I only had a scene with Michael.
Okay, Carlo Di Meglio.
Carlo Di Meglio.
Yeah.
Carlo Di Meglio... I know him, but I didn't have scenes with him, so I can judge him as for working with him. As a person, he's very nice, but I really can't say never had dialogue with him.
These two you might not also have any scenes with. Catriona McCall?
No, Catriona as well, but I met her at conventions lately, and I'm crazy about Catriona.
Yes.
Is wonderful.
Actually,
she's clever, elegant, funny, a real lady, and I'm enthusiastic. Each time I'm told she's gonna be in at a convention, I'm twice as pleased to be in there.
Yeah, actually, both of them. I met them at the convention you were supposed to be at, but your flight got canceled or you got held up at the airport.
Yeah,
and they were both really sweethearts, like you said. Again, you might not have had any scenes with her. Janet Ogden?
Same. Never met her.
Yeah. Annie Bell.
Oh, Annie. Annie was extremely sexy. One of the sexiest women I met. Very funny, full of life, even a bit too much.
Yeah.
Which created her a lot of problems later on in her life. Very funny. What was funny about Annie was her English. As many French people,
mm-hmm.
She has the accent while speaking English, and I was laughing at her lines because once she had to say and for curious people with a knife in their hand, I only feel pity. And she was saying, and for curious people with a knife in their hand, I only feel pity. No.
You'd already mentioned how great you got on with her, but Lorraine Bissell.
Yes, Lorraine was a sport. I mean, she was really my female part, I would say. We were very alike.
Bless you.
We're quite the same underground, gypsy, multilingual, an aristocratic side, witty, sharp. So we were getting along famously.
Zora Karova.
Zora was a good girl. I mean, not a genius as an actress, I should say, but nice. Nice person to work with. At the time, she was having a love story with Danilo Mattei, so they were either on set or fucking. So she didn't spend a lot. But some 2 or 3 years ago, an Italian journalist came to me for an interview, and he told me that he had interviewed Zora Karova. So I said, "Do you have her telephone number?" And so I phoned her up on her cell phone and said, "Hi, I am Mike Logan. I am Mike Logan."
Who's there? Who's there?
She had a chat by the phone, and she was nice.
Yeah, I actually met her as well. These conventions have been really good lately, bringing over Italian stars.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to meet a lot of these people we're talking about.
And it's for us to meet back people you have lost facts.
And what's amusing is, you know, your impressions of how these people were really do correlate with what I saw when I met them. It's very it's nice to see that it's not just my impression, but this is exactly like these are how these people really are.
Mm-hmm.
You already mentioned Barbara Capisti, but David Brandon.
David Brandon, British.
I think that says it all.
Is it enough?
It's enough. Unless you need to, you know, go ahead and expound if you want.
No, British. I'm British myself. I mean, I had a British education, but then I had such a great experience with the United States that I lost some of my stiffness.
Right, the reserve.
It's like, you know what happened when Vivian Leigh, very British herself, was working on Gone with the Wind with the second director, who was what was his name? The one who was credited for and he was very American and cowboy. And
right.
At the point, he was so pissed with her that he said, "Miss Leigh, could you take that book?" Because she always had the book with her, the original.
Right.
"Could you take that book and stick it up your British royal ass?" That's a bit what the David Brandon evokes to me.
And lastly, you even work with this is a really interesting one, the former porn star and cannibal film specialist Robert Kernan.
Oh, yes, but I only met him 2 months ago at Chiller.
Yes, he was a nice guy.
And I you know, no, because I hadn't scenes with him, so I didn't meet him at the time. And when I saw that he was at this convention, I said, "Oh, Robert Kernan, the porn star."
Right.
And a man 100 years old. Big, fat, hunchback,
right.
Very nice, but with hearing problems, so always saying, hey, what?
Right.
Not very sexy.
I understand, in addition to your stage and television work, as you mentioned before, actually, you're also a licensed physiotherapist. That seems like an unusual right turn from the acting field. So how did that come about?
I told you because it came. I was studying ballet in Amsterdam at the Royal Ballet School of the Netherlands, and when I injured my back, and in that school at that time, not anymore, unfortunately, but at that time they had an adjoined school of physiotherapy, of sportive physiotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
So as dancers, we had I think 2 hours a week just to, you know, to be able to help a fellow dancer in an emergency, and nothing much. But I found out that I was very inclined to
right.
this. And also the teacher, who was a Swedish lady, blind, you know that blind people are the best masseurs.
Right.
And she said, you have the gift, she said, because massage is a gift before being a science. It's a gift. It's something you have in your head, in your hands, and I had it. But okay, I said, okay, well, okay. Then when I injured my back, it was a tragedy for me because I was told that I couldn't study ballet for at least 1 year. I wasn't that young anymore. I didn't know what to do. And then they convinced me, whilst I was deciding what to do, to take the school, the physiotherapy, the sportive physiotherapy school. So from ballet, I switched to that. And then it's something I like. I also teach. I teach at an institute in Rome. At times, they call me to teach. I'm a specialist in back problems.
Oh. So is there anything else that you wanted to bring up or share based on anything we've mentioned, or do you have anything you want to promote?
No, I don't think so. I told you about the last movie I made in Texas, The Infliction, so hopefully I hope people will buy it and watch it, and I cross my fingers for House at the Edge of the Park 2. And
how far along is that? Is it just you have a script and you're shopping it around, or
we have Ruggiero and myself, we wrote the subject, the treatment more than the subject. It was very detailed. But then Andrew Jones wrote a wonderful screenplay, very violent but very deep, with a lot of psychology. It's not
right.
just horror for the sake of it, or violence for the sake of it, and. But it's very violent, and so Andrew Jones is the producer as well, and he's getting the financing, you know, which is complicated because
yeah.
there's a lot of interest for the movie, but big companies want to put their hands in it, and we don't want this to happen.
Right.
So they want to change things, they want to cast people we don't like.
Right.
This, so we're trying to do it with less money but independently.
Okay. Well, thank you again for joining us here.
It's been a long chat.
Yeah, and on behalf of both myself and your fans around the world, thank you for the films. Grazie per tutti.
Hey, thanks to you. Once again, Happy New Year, and all the best for you and your families.
I appreciate it, and you as well. And again, I really appreciate you coming on the air with us.
Thank you for listening.
Take care. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our up-close and personal interview with Giambara Lombardo with DJ. Next week on Third Eye Cinema, Mike Rasso of EI Entertainment, 80s SOV standby camp motion picture, and Retro Seduction Cinema, home of Joe Sorno. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on the air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio.